Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to Marvelous Disney with Aaron Adams, the podcast that discusses the most recent doings at one of the more dynamic divisions of the Walt Disney Company, which is, of course, Marvel Entertainment. This is entertainment writer Jim Hill, and my co-host, the amazing Aaron Adams, and I are recording this week's show on Thursday, September 20th, 2023. And just in the past 48 hours, there's been all sorts of Marvel-related news breaking. I mean, case in point, look, you know, Aaron, I don't think either of us would say that we were rabid fans of Secret Invasion.
It was a show that entered both my eyeballs and ear holes simultaneously.
Wow. I you know, that was right down the middle. It wasn't praise, it wasn't disparaging, it was like, wow, you should work for Hallmark. You know, it's like, with that recommendation, well, look, all right, if you want to hear from Samuel L. Jackson himself about how this Marvel Studios production actually came together, Marvel Studios assembled the making of Secret Invasion, just popped up on this subscription streaming service yesterday, Wednesday, September 20th. On the other hand, if you want to learn more about how Thor, Love and Thunder, how that came to look the way that it did, the latest art of book from Marvel Studios, Marvel Studios Thor, Love and Thunder, The Art of the Movie, hit store shelves on Tuesday of this week, September 19th. And I have to say, Aaron, this past couple of weeks, it's been difficult to ride the tidal wave of Marvel-related books that have been coming out. I mean, just today, for example, I learned of Joanna Robinson's MCU, The Reign of Marvel Studios, which is coming from Live Right Press, October 10th of this year. And that 528-page hardcover, $35, $31.50 if you head over to Amazon and pre-order. But I have to say, it comes with some killer behind-the-scenes stories about how specific Marvel projects got cast, which Aaron and I will share on the second half of today's show. But again, lots of Marvel-related news, including a dispute over what the next film in Phase 5 of the MCU actually costs to make. But first, want to remind you that the news portion of Marvelous Disney is brought to you by Touring Plans' own travel agency. And if you're thinking of heading on down to Walt Disney World in the not-so-distant future, why not give these obviously very knowledgeable folks a chance to book your vacation package to that resort? And if you're nice, they may even toss in a subscription to Touring Plans for free. Seriously, though, if you're planning on heading to Central Florida anytime soon, Touring Plans' own travel agency is the smartest way to go. Please check them out at touringplans.com/travel. Okay, so earlier this week, Vanity Fair revealed that this upcoming release from Marvel Studios, and again, the Marvels, and Vanity Fair put out that it only cost $130 million to make. But given that the investment community has been all over the mouse lately for spending $150 million to make a Haunted Mansion movie, only to then have that seriously underperform at the box office this past summer, for them to learn that a Marvel movie is arriving this November with just a $130 million price tag, that was deemed a reason to rejoice, or so thought Wall Street. Unfortunately, party ended rather abruptly 24 hours later when Forbes reported that the real cost of making the Marvels was more than double the amount that Vanity Fair had initially reported. In fact, that the real cost of this Nia DaCosta movie was actually $274.8 million. To make matters worse, especially if you live in the UK, word got out that in an effort to keep the cost of producing, again, the sequel to the 2019's Captain Marvel down, Marvel Studios opted to primarily shoot The Marvels in the UK at Pinewood Studios in Buckinghamshire and Longcross Studios in Surrey, to be exact, in order to then qualify for a $55 million subsidy, which had been provided by the British government. This happens all the time, this sort of filmmaking subsidy. In fact, for the better part of a decade up here in New England, the state of Massachusetts offered all sorts of tax breaks to folks that would come and shoot movies in the Bay State. And the thinking was that, okay, we give you, say, a $10, $15, $20 million tax write-off or subsidy, but you then come to town and make your $70, $80, $100 million movie, and that money funnels back into the economy. So that's the thinking there. Of they spent $55 million to lure the Marvels to the UK to shoot there, and this $200 million or this $130 million movie gets shot at Pinewood and Longcross Studios. And also, there have in fact been MCU movies that cost more than $274.8 million to make. And those are Avengers Endgame for 2019, that cost $400 million to make. Avengers Age of Ultron from 2015, that cost $365 million to make. And then finally, Avengers Infinity War from 2018, that's the bargain here in the pile. That only cost $300 million to make.
So what you're trying to tell me is I should be expecting an Endgame or an Avengers level of quality, right? All of those co-stars coming in or what? Where's the money going? They're in space half the time. It's a black background. What the hell?
Yeah, I was going to bring this up. You know, I mean, don't get me wrong. We have three lovely female characters, Captain Marvel, Ms. Marvel, and Photon, as the centerpiece of this. And remember, those that have seen this so far say that this 98-minute-long movie is breezy, it's fun, it's something we haven't seen from Marvel in quite some time. And, you know, honestly, Disney is anticipating that it's going to do really well at the box office. However, when you spend $274.8 million to make your movie, and it's only 98 minutes long, that breaks down to $2.8 million per minute.
You know, Jim, you're not taking into account one critical factor. Flurkins are very expensive to hire. They've got notorious agents, and there's a lot of Flurkins I hear in this movie. So I think a lot of the money could have been a Flurkin fund.
Actually, I know you're being silly here, but you actually hit upon a real expense because it turns out Brie Larson is deathly allergic to cats.
Yeah, got to CG all them bad boys in the shots, right?
That's it, exactly. Man. So it's like, oy, but. But anyway, speaking of the poor woman who had to shoot the shots where Brie Larson is gesturing and petting an invisible cat, Nia DaCosta spoke with Vanity Fair about working on this movie. And she said, well, look, while she loved filming The Marvels, Nia admitted that there were days when she texted Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings director Destin Daniel Crichton to vent about the mounting frustrations that DaCosta was feeling. You know, and she goes on to say, sometimes you'd be in a scene and you'd be like, what the hell does any of this mean? Or you have an actor that's looking at some crazy thing happening out in space, and what they're actually doing is looking at a blue X. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are obviously hard days, days where you tell yourself, this just isn't working. So to circle back to the whole Marvel's cost $2.8 million a minute to make, look, there was a time when people used to gossip about how much Captain EO cost Disney to make in the mid-1980s. I mean, that 3D music video for the parks was only 17 minutes long and was originally budgeted to just cost $10 million. But Francis Ford Coppola ran up the budget to the point where they will admit that it cost $23.7 million to make, which back in the day, that means that Captain EO cost $1.39 million to make. On the other hand, if you adjust for inflation, those 1986 dollars, the cost of making Captain EO is now $66.4 million. So that film, once again, has reclaimed the most expensive film to make per minute in Hollywood history with a price tag of $3.9 million a minute. So, you know, the next time you look at your bootleg of Captain EO, just, you know, it's like, wow, that's a really expensive elephant costume there.
Look in the background. See if they've got any Flerkins cast as extras. Because they are expensive. I'm telling you.
They are expensive. Okay. Speaking of Francis Ford Coppola, once again, Vanity Fair had a piece in the past week that shined a spotlight on Kenneth Branagh, the director and star of A Hunting in Venice, the third in Branagh's series of big screen adaptations of Agatha Christie's Hercule Poirot books. And as part of this profile, the topic of Kenneth directing the very first Thor film for Marvel Studios came up. And as Branagh was meeting with Marvel Studios head Kevin Feige to discuss his casting ideas and the style in which he wanted to direct Thor, which, you know, remember, came out in theaters May of 2011, Kenneth told Kevin that he saw the story of Thor strictly in Shakespearean terms, especially when it came to Thor, Loki, and Odin's family dynamic. And, well, here's the quote. "We've always been interested in what goes on in the corridors of power, whether it's in the White House or in Buckingham Palace. And Shakespeare was interested in the lives of medieval royal families, too. But what he did was raid the Roman myths and the Greek myths for story ideas. Whereas Stan Lee, I think when it came to developing characters for the Marvel comics, Stan went for the myths that Shakespeare hadn't used. Now, mind you, Feige liked the idea of a family dynamic driving this movie starring Thor, Loki, and Odin. But Kevin had a far different family in mind than the one that Kenneth was proposing. The family that Feige wanted to sort of model Thor and Loki and Odin's relationship on was the Corleones, you know, the Godfather, and with the notion of Loki being the Fredo of the family.
Yeah, Thor should have gave him a big kiss.
Take him out for a little fishing on the lake, are we?
Yeah. Oh, man, if that scene would have played out in any Thor movie. Oh, God. That would have been hilarious.
You have to understand, in the Hill family, the Godfather, that's like church at our house. My brother Peter will put it on at family gatherings and we'll all, you know, go into, you know, after a large meal, go down and we'll go to the mattresses, you know, and wait for the cannolis to come out.
God, now I want to edit Thor into the Godfather with Loki and just see what it looks like. But go ahead.
Well, no, I mean, would the color palette work for that?
No, not at all. But still, uh-huh. Well, actually, I mean, you know, when you're tinkering with the individual work parts, you can drab out the color and make, okay, Thor's bright red a darker crimson to kind of fit that dark drab interior of the Godfather's den, mm-hmm, of doom.
Yeah. Oh, well, no, please, if you take that on, let me know. Okay. Speaking of, though, playing with hues, did you see this news about last year's Halloween special from Marvel Studios, Werewolf by Night?
Wait a minute. Is this about how they're going to do it in color?
Well, yeah. Yeah. Wait. Let me explain. Michael Giacchino, who directed the original iteration of this thing, which, remember, was kind of a very loving Valentine to those black and white horror films that Universal Studios made back in the 30s and the 40s. And on October 20th, I want to say? Hang on. Yeah, October 20th, we're going to get Werewolf. Yes, we're getting Werewolf.
I love the movie American Werewolf in London, where the meatloaf travels to London on a vacation, gets bitten by a werewolf, and when the full moon comes out, turns into a werewolf.
There we go. All right. Professional show business here, folks. Okay, Werewolf by Night in color. And Michael went on, now the thinking is that they're taking, again, the special that was crafted last year and turning it into more of a tribute to the Hammer horror films of the 1960s. And Michael took to social media just this week to say, "We spent a lot of time working on this color version. We wanted to pay homage to the incredible vibrant color in horror films like the ones Hammer made, and it's a whole new look for Werewolf by Night." And this drops on October 20th, and then just 4 days later, we get the Werewolf by Night, The Art of the Special book from Marvel Studios, you know, which will lovingly take us through all of the, you know, the carefully crafted black and white images. Though I wonder if this is actually the reason why it's arriving in stores as late as it is. Maybe it does, in fact, cover both the black and white version and the color version.
I would have held off for the Hammer homage to do that for the sequel. Because then you can kind of start creating this thing where, hey, if we're going to do Werewolf by Night, it's going to be Halloween. But it's also going to be in a different style of a different horror genre. Or a different horror artiste, you know?
Wow.
But anyway, go ahead.
Well, no. I'm kind of intrigued by that, to go from a different, a Werewolf by Night, but jumping the different style of horror. I mean, you know, to go from black and white Universal to Vivid, a Hammer film, to...
Well, what if you did, like, you know, if you had Technicolor in there, like if you had this evolution from black and white to what was the next step in color? And if it was Technicolor, then do whatever, like an homage to the Technicolor era of monster movies. And then the next evolution was Viviscope or whatever the hell it is, you know, and you just keep working your way up. Every time you do a sequel, you just do the next phase of whatever horror style that was.
Let me throw a different idea at you.
Please
here.
Do.
What if, you know, you jumped a decade and you did horror like they did in the 70s, like, say, The Exorcist or The Omen. I mean, you sort of leaned into that more based in reality, which somehow made the horror that much more horrifying.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of playground there, because you've already got the monsters aspect that you can play with, and then you've got the witchy magic kind of thing with the, you know, like the gem that they had and all that. And all of those ethereal, supernatural fringe elements of the Marvel Universe that we're not quite playing in, that could be their playground and just have so much fun with that. But also, you know, keep a, you know, like your theme just keeps evolving, kind of like American Horror Story is an anthology show.
There you go.
And it's
there
like, this isn't quite an anthology show, but we're evolving the look and always paying homage to the inspiration that we're pulling from. And so,
this is a really good idea, Marvel. Send the check to Aaron Adams, okay?
If you get the stalker movie, like, you know, Halloween, where it's the shadow that's always stalking you. That could be, you know, very simple. But that's a stupid thought that I like to throw out there, just like, on a whim, what about you do this?
Okay. Well, all right. Now, speaking of things evolving, Tom Holland shared a funny story recently about what it was like to actually be on the set of Spider-Man No Way Home, which is now infamous for how much of the film script actually got rewritten right on the set. And what Tom talked about was, you could ask the director, what happens in Act 3? And his response is, I'm still trying to figure it out. And speaking of that, what's going to happen in the second half of today's Marvelous Disney? Aaron and I have an idea, but we'll sort that matter out during this upcoming commercial break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Last week, we meant to talk about the new season 2 of I Am Groot on Disney Plus, which you watched all of it. Is it 5 episodes? 6? How many of their?
I honestly don't remember. They were so short. They just blink, 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 and gone. But they were entertaining.
They were. By the way, what did you think of the one that brought back The Watcher?
Yeah, that was very, very, very funny to have the watcher narrating that little story and the, I don't want to give away any of the gags because they're so short that it, to spoil a single joke would do it a disservice. The overall, like, you know, if you want a review of it, oh, it's great. I think it's charming and it's a lot of fun, and they're short, bite-sized, doesn't take long to get through the whole season. But I got a problem. And this is just one of those Aaron things. You know how it goes. I don't think that as a series two would make me go, oh, I need to subscribe to Disney Plus. It's too small and almost inconsequential. Like, I watched it and went, well, that was nice, and I moved on, and I really haven't thought much about it since. And I know that the work is good. The quality of everything is great. It's just that it's so small. And what I was thinking was, you know what would be awesome? Is I remember growing up and watching, like, Saturday morning cartoons. And they would have, like, you know, the Looney Tunes half-hour programming block where they would just mix that stuff up on shuffle. And maybe you get a Speedy Gonzales, maybe you get Sylvester and Tweety Bird, maybe you get Bugs and Daffy, who knows? It's Saturday morning, but you get a little bit of whatever. And I thought, wouldn't it be awesome if they made more of stuff like this that is bite-size and packaged it? And, you know, Disney is really a family-friendly, you know, aiming at kids. Bring back Saturday morning cartoons on Disney Plus. Create these little bite-sized things that are small and easy to produce, you know, because you're not doing a two-hour movie. We can knock these out relatively quickly. And you do a batch of them, and then you create a little block of programming where you actually say, hey, at 10 o'clock in the morning, we've got the special block is when it launches. You can watch it, obviously, whenever. But, you know, it's just another way of trying to make something special is just by repackaging it. Right now, it's too small and insignificant. Bundle it with some other stuff that's just like it. And, oh, that's fun. That's neat.
That's an interesting idea. The one thing, and again, it's kind of ironic that as Aaron and I are talking right now, supposedly the producers are sitting down with the writers, and based on the news last night, they seemed hopeful that at least today, perhaps they could actually resolve the writer's strike. But again, it's one of these drum beats where it's like, that's cute, that's little, that's charming. And, you know, when you talk with somebody involved with it, it's like, thank you for saying that. It was hugely expensive. Right. You know, and it's just the whole notion of, I'm glad you were charmed, but I'm sorry that you thought it was slight, because that's a year and a half of my life.
Yeah, it is.
And I get exactly what you're saying. It is not enough to convince someone that they really need to subscribe to Disney Plus. I mean, maybe if you're the biggest Groot fan on the planet, but you're only staying for a month.
Right.
But when you talk with folks who work on the subscription streaming side at Disney, they talk about, yes, we have to lay down big bait every month to get people to stay. But at the same time, you have to lay out a full table. Somebody was actually, it was the Carl's Date that, you know, they did a bunch of
thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And they actually described this as like, look, when we do something like that, it's kind of like the relish tray at Thanksgiving. You know, it's not something you immediately go for, but you're kind of glad when you discover that it's there. It's like, oh, I can get the little pickles.
Yep.
So I Am Groot is another relish tray, you know, for the, you know, I guess it got put online on Disney Plus in August of this year. And so it was kind of sort of the thing when you're up front on the top going through the banner, seeing what's there. It's like, oh, they got some new I Am Groot stuff.
Yeah. I'm thinking more along the lines of repackaging for other services because they've got their terrestrial television stuff.
Oh, God, yeah.
And, well, I mean, they've already put Ms. Marvel on Hulu and Secret Invasion as well, right?
Yep.
It could just be one of those things of if you build more of that, yeah, it's a lot of relish. But it's tasty relish. And if you repackage it, if you add relish to a hot dog, well, that's like a meal now, right? And so it's just like you just build a little bit more of that, and then you can go rebundle it over on Hulu like a year later and get, like you always like to say, the second bite of the same apple, which I really got to ask you, how do you eat apples? Because it sounds awfully wasteful. You only take one bite, really?
Well, what is it? I just heard an amazing story about former Supreme Court Justice Souter. They just did this wonderful documentary with a bunch of his former law Clerks, and they talked about how Souter would eat the entire apple, like stem and core.
Oh, yeah.
And his staff, you know, it's like, don't do that. You'll get sick. You're a Supreme Court justice. You make them. You need to be healthy to make important decisions. Don't eat the whole apple. So no, I try to, you know, especially this year with the apple crop having been destroyed basically by the hard frost and all the rain. So
join us next week on Eating Apples with Jim Hill.
There we go. You know, the other podcast will be getting up out of the ground soon. Okay. All right. So we go from happy Groot news to a little bit of sad news. I mean, we talked recently about how Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds were halfway through shooting Deadpool 3 when, due to, again, we were just talking about the actors and the writers' strike, these two actors were forced to go home and wait it out. And Hugh went home to his wife of 27 years, Deborah Lee, only to then pack up his stuff and move out because these two then decided to amicably end their marriage. And they released this statement. We've been blessed to share almost three decades together as husband and wife in a wonderful, loving marriage. Our journey now is shifting, and we have decided to separate to pursue our individual growth.
Hold on. I'm sorry. There's noise outside real quick. Yeah, it's a stampede of women. And it looks like, yeah, it looks like they're going for you. Hugh, look out! Look out! Yeah, this is dangerous news, but okay, go ahead, continue.
Okay, well, all right. Our family has always and will always be our highest priority, and we undertake this next chapter with gratitude, love, and kindness. And we appreciate your understanding and respecting our privacy as our family navigates this transition in all of our lives. And when they say all of their lives, it's important to note here that Hugh and Deborah Lee have two kids, a son Oscar and a daughter Ava, who's 18. And something like this is always sad news. And we hope they come through it okay. And we hope that Hugh is also able to outrun that herd of women who just chased him by.
They know, really seem house. Determined to get a piece of meat today. They're ravenous. They're ravenous.
Okay. But again, you know, hopefully happier times further on down the line. And speaking of further on down the line, we've got Disneyland Forward, the expansion of Disney's Anaheim Resort, and been getting some more details about that. In fact, just in the past week or so, it's now appears to be a third theme park that's actually going to be built across the street from Disneyland Park and Disney's California Adventure. And this should be included as part of that $60 billion in theme park and tourism-based experiences that the company released as part of that investors conference at Walt Disney World just yesterday. And in fact, Josh D'Amaro, while he was appearing at that conference, went on to say, what is this project going to feature? And this is the quote that I think will interest Marvel fans. Imagine us bringing Wakanda to life. In terms of bringing the latest Disney, Marvel, Pixar intellectual properties to the park, we haven't even come close to scratching the surface. And we have learned that incorporating Disney IP increases the return on investment significantly. And I guess what's kind of interesting here is, Aaron, you may recall last year or thereabouts when the word first got out about Disney Forward and Disney shared some concept art, the giant panther that we've seen in both of the Black Panther films to date showed up as part of the architecture for this third theme park, suggesting that you know, it was the exterior of a show building and there would be a Black Panther-related attraction inside. However, Jim Shull would slap me upside the head if I did not, in fact, mention that this is concept art, people. And yes, Josh D'Amaro stood on stage and said, imagine us bringing Wakanda to life. He didn't say, we are bringing Wakanda to life.
All right. Wouldn't it be neat if he was doing an errand? Wouldn't it be neat if? I think it'd be really cool if somebody would do this.
You're not wrong. So just want to stress that, folks, that, okay, they said it, and it might happen, and it was featured on the early concept art, but I think it's my ex-wife, Michelle Valladolid, who I love this turn of phrase for her. it's not concrete until they pour the concrete. And even then, it's not concrete.
And all of your chats, like, they've been, Disney as a company, they've obviously been leaning heavily into the Marvel brand by putting it into the parks. Mm-hmm. They've obviously got their Star Wars land with Batuu.
And, before I forget, we talked about the Avengers Vault at California Adventure. It actually opened this week. There were inside getting pictures, and it looks like exactly what they said it would be. It's kind of high-end Marvel theme park merch. So, cool. But yeah, to back up just what you're saying, yep, they're doing it.
Well, they lean into that. My question is, have you ever heard of them getting ready to lean in anything out of the Fox library? Like, I would die if they did, like, an alien attraction. And I'm not saying that Alien is a good idea because kids, you know, friendly is spooky and it's a horrible idea. Horrible idea. But Fox property, you know, they spent all that money. Now, if they don't start using it and incorporating it into the parks, does it seem like they're going to start selling off bits and chunks of it? What's the deal? I mean, they've got it. They should use it. And I think there's got to be some... Fox Princess somewhere. Wasn't Princess Bride in that pile?
Well, this is a piece of news from July of this year. Toward what you just asked about, you know, Disney doing something within the Alien franchise. June 13, 2023, Disney's first Alien franchise movie gets a 2024 release date. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a follow-up story here that says it's been shooting and now it's... Oh, this is bizarre. The headline says it's an alien film that's headed directly to Hulu. On the other hand, the body of the article says FX Alien Series continues to film in Thailand without SAG actors.
Yeah, I know that there was a series, and I can't remember who was directing it off the top of my head, but there was a good director, and I was excited for it. Mm-hmm. It seems like, you know, if they're going to make more of this stuff, it seems like they're interested in it, or they think the public is interested in it.
Well, I mean, think about that film last year, Prey.
Oh, yeah.
Which will, you know,
featured the Predators.
That's it, exactly. But reach back and set it in the early 1700s and had the indigenous people doing battle with these crazy bounty hunters.
Yeah, it was Predator Fox as well.
It was.
So they got both of them, right? Alien and Predator.
Think about it. That's how they got the Alien versus Predator films out there.
So I'm so torn on this, Jim, because I don't want to, you know, a ride that would scare the bejesus out of little children with aliens and predators. But I also think about Japan, where they've got a zip line that zips you through Godzilla's freaking mouth. And it's like you could have some fun. I don't. Maybe it's a Halloween horror thing that's only a limited time, but. They've got other properties besides Marvel and Lucasfilm, and I just wonder when they're going to start cherry picking from all. There's a lot of gems in there they could choose from. Anyway, I'm off track.
No. Just one brief note here. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a time of year. Don't get me wrong. Disney makes a lot of money off of Mickey's Not So Scary. Likewise, out in California, they have their Oogie Boogie Bash, and these are family friendly Halloween events, and they do very well for the company, but they don't even begin to approach the amount of money that, say, Not Scary Farm makes for Knott's Berry Farm or Halloween Horror Nights makes for Universal on both coasts. Mm-hmm. If you look at Hong Kong Disneyland during its first couple of years of operation, their thinking was, we can try anything. Over here, they don't really know Disney. So they actually did, right off of Main Street, like Universal level horror mazes. You know, you went into like a haunted hotel and you went into a UFO, and it was very popular with folks in Hong Kong. But at the same time, they didn't know from what a Disney theme park was supposed to be. And that's the thing here in the States is like, we'd love to do. In fact, they spent a couple of years sussing out a kind of a Tim Burton event that they were looking to maybe do at Disney Hollywood Studios in Florida. And it was just sort of like, we could do Nightmare. We could do his Alice in Wonderland. You know, we could do Frankenweenie. You know, we all of these things we own, we could do in the parks. But Disney, in the end, just couldn't bring themselves to turn the key on it.
Well, I'm going to throw down the gauntlet right now. Disney for Halloween, Escape from the Nostromo. It's your haunted house, and you make it look like the ship from Alien, and you've got dead-end corridors with an alien in it, and your job is to get to the shuttle to escape the Nostromo. And if I see that you do it in the future, I'm coming after you with all my lawyers. Blah, blah, blah is okay. My lawyer.
All right. Before you hire the lawyers, let me tell you about the actual ride that Disney, when it did Disney MGM, it actually went to Fox and got the rights to Alien. In fact, there was a moment in the Great Movie Ride where you actually went through the Nostromo, and they had the world's worst audio animatronic of Sigourney Weaver. Ooh. But that was there to distract you from the fact that the alien was about to uncurl itself monster from the wall or come down from above with its, you know, its second jaw coming out and biting at you. It was a great bit of misdirection. But prior to that, they had actually designed for Disneyland an attraction called the Nostromo, and the gimmick of it is that it started at the moment that Ripley hit the self-destruct button, and so you're in a ride vehicle, and you have to get to the escape pod.
All right, well, I call off my lawyers. They've already done it. I retract my statement. Well done, Disney. Okay. Well done. All right.
But because it was scary, they couldn't bring themselves to do it.
Oh, you know, well, get my lawyer back on the phone.
There we go. All right. Anyway, pivoting back to the actual topic of the show, Marvel, we were talking at the top of today's show about Joanna Robinson's upcoming book, MCU, The Reign of Marvel Studios. And what I've enjoyed so far of the excerpts I've read of this book is them talking about the difficulty of casting these films. Toward that end, one of the more interesting passages of the book discusses the casting of Captain America, which, according to Kevin Feige, was super hard, and it took a long time. He talks about how they had met with so many people who were just not right for the role, he started to think, are we not going to be able to find Captain America? And if we can't find Captain America, how are we going to do the Avengers? Is this whole thing going to fall apart? And there was one performer that Marvel Studios really wanted, but early on, he had declined even to audition, and that was Chris Evans. And why he didn't want to audition is Evans had already played Johnny Storm in the two Fantastic Four movies. And Feige, hugely familiar with his work, and it was just like, that's the guy. We should get the guy. And it's like, he checks all the boxes. He's an American, and he's a great actor, and he's funny, and he's charming, and he's affable. But the thing is, he also, on screen, when you're watching him, you got this sense of, this is a guy with a moral compass, that he's really relatable, and that he can play the vulnerability of the early Steve Rogers. But when he can be the skinny character, but he can also be the strong Captain America. And Marvel invites Evans in for a meeting, and they sit him down, they show him the artwork. They explain what's going to happen with the movie. But the thing is, they tell him they need him to commit to a 9-movie deal. Now, he doesn't have to audition, but it's still going to be 9 movies. So Steve went off. He said, well, I need time to decide. And Feige talks about that he went away for a weekend, and that weekend was tough. Chris Evans comes back and tells him his decision, and it's no. And the thing he talks about is, getting that offer, it's the ultimate job offer on the biggest scale. And as an actor, you're not supposed to say no to something like that. And when you look at the finished films and you see the costumes, and at the time it felt like the right thing to do because, again, it was 9 movies. Robert Downey Jr. had already been cast as Iron Man. And he really liked the idea of, wow, this could be really fun to do this with Chris Evans as Captain America. And he heard that Chris said no. So, it's the Monday after the big weekend, and he said no. And Robert Downey Jr. gets on the phone and says, having this gig, this steady job, it won't constrict your opportunities. It'll expand them. You'll have the opportunity in between these Marvel movies to do two other things. So how about go back and tell them I don't want to do 9 movies, but if you can consider me only doing 6, I'll do this. Now, even so, with committing to that, Evans wound up being locked in a role, that role, for roughly a decade, which he said at the get-go kind of scared him, but then closed out this statement with, you know, look, maybe the thing you're most scared of is actually the thing you should do. So he took the part. But that's largely an excerpt from Joanna's book, MCU, the Reign of Marvel Studios, which again shows up at your local bookstore on October 10th. And speaking of books, we circle back on one of our favorites here at this show, James Gunn, director of the 3 Guardians movie, and now, you know, over at Warner Brothers trying to do good work. But again, he can't get anything going on the DC side until the writers and the actors' strike is up. And we mentioned, top of the show today, that Marvel Studios assembled documentary, the one about Secret Invasion, that dropped just earlier this week. But earlier this month, on September 13th, the Marvel Studios assembled documentary about the making of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 was posted. And as part of that film, James Gunn talked about how when he went in to make the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie, he had a little book that he had assembled. And in fact, he shared it with Kevin Feige and the production team. And he describes that, I worked very hard to put together this little book with all these pictures and photo reference and all this stuff. And in this book were all the characters, you know, from the Guardians world and who I wanted to play those characters. And of course, the irony here is none of those actors that were in my book actually wound up playing the characters, with the exception of Zoe Saldana, who I met and loved right from the beginning. So, Aaron, I'm not entirely sure what the lesson here is.
That, I mean, I know that Tarantino's had a little thing where he's like, hey, I wrote the script called Pulp Fiction, and for this character, I want my first choice is this guy, and second choice is this guy, and if we can't get them, I want the, and, you know, mm-hmm. he would write with one specific person in mind to play that role. And it's like, obviously in Hollywood, they might not be available at that time mm-hmm. that you're shooting your movie, so I got to have 2 or 3 backup choices. And I think that's very, very common. You reach out to someone, they'll be like, oh, I'd love to, but I got this other thing going on over here. Mm-hmm. You know, they could have been Chris Evans they wanted, and he's like, sorry, I signed up for 9 freaking movies, guys. I used to have this IHOP job where I bust tables. I'm like really committed to it. Now I got to do 9 movies. I'm a working actor all of a sudden, and I'm booked.
Wow. But it's so interesting that you bring up Pulp Fiction, because when you look at that cast today, mm-hmm. that's all A-listers.
Mm-hmm.
Who else would he have been going after? Travolta, Willis, you know, Jackson, Ving Rhames, you know, I mean, you know, all of those people, right. Let alone Uma Thurman.
Yeah, well, he's got his list of regulars, you know, that he likes to work with, and was it Michael Madsen is like always in his stuff. You know, he's such a fan of cinema that he's probably got not just an A choice, B choice, and C choice, but he's probably got all the way to Z. On, wouldn't it be great if this person played this character? But anyway.
Speaking of which, though, have you heard that the next one is supposedly his last movie?
Yeah, I heard that. I've heard that, I think, for the last 3 movies now. I will believe Quentin Tarantino has made his last movie when he is in a pine box and 6 feet under. Until then, I believe that man. Well, first off, it's good publicity. This is my last film. Well, I got to see it then, right? Mm-hmm. And, I got an itch to tell another story all of a sudden. And I think, you know, Scorsese has probably gone through that a number of times. And this is my last film. Miyazaki, right? Weren't you guys talking about he's retired 100 times?
It's so funny. Literally this thing that said it's coming out this year, The Boy and the Heron, was supposed to be his last film. But on the red carpet at the, I want to say, Toronto Film Festival, the head of the studio is like, well, yeah, I know he said that, but he's also been showing up at work and saying, I got an idea. So it's like, all right, here's hoping that Quentin goes the Miyazaki route and just we get just more and going. More good stuff.
Yep.
So,
yep.
And speaking of good stuff that keeps going, 32nd Street I mean, I have to tell you, I'm not sometimes comfortable with the things I learn on your podcast about Madison Avenue. I suddenly feel dirty and used and manipulated.
That means it's working. All right, go ahead.
Okay, so what rug are you going to be pulling out from under me this week?
Well, I'm not going to tell you.
Okay.
I'm going to tell Robert Orth, who's actually a Disney Dish listener as well as a Marvelous Disney listener.
And he's
now a 30-second patron subscriber. And I sent him a message. I said, hey, thanks for signing up. What do you like about the show so far? What do you want to hear more of? And he said, I would love it. Actually, this is kind of funny. He said, I like most of your shows, which means a couple missed the mark there. And so I said, well, hey, man, I want to make sure that you absolutely love whatever I do next. So what do you want me to do? And he said, I would like to hear the inspiration for some of how commercials are made. And I'm like, well, I can only speak for myself because I don't know where other people's inspiration comes from, but I've got about 30 years of material where I can tell stories about it. So this episode is many, many, many very weird, bizarre, crazy commercials that were created because client had weird circumstances for me, or maybe I just had a wacky idea, but it fit the demographic or whatever. But it's how the sausage is made is that episode on 32nd Street.
Oh, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, I will make a point of checking that out. But again, I also check out what you're doing on social media. And so we are still at the X. We are still at the Twitters.
Yeah. I don't have time for anything else. So I just stick with what's there and keep it simple. And that's at Azaprod, AZAPROD.
Okay. We're still over there on X as Jim Hill Media, likewise on Instagram, also on Facebook as Jim Hill Media News. Let's see, while we're doing plugs here, mention the other podcasts we have here. We've got, of course, Disney Dish that I do with Len Testa. Oh, God, I didn't even tell you the story about, folks, Aaron and I are recording this week's show late because we had to push the Disney Dish recording session a little bit
today.
And
why was that you had to push the Disney Dish session, Jim?
Because the Today Show reached out to our friend, Mr. Testa, and had to do the pre-interview because he's going on the show tomorrow to be an expert on the Walt Disney Company. So, I mean, it's just, I'm sorry. I think that's really cool.
I did send him an email, by the way, saying, please, for the love of all things holy, just ask them permission if they would mention that you got a new show called Disney Unpacked coming October 1st. And he's I'll ask, but and I'm like, look, if they say no, no big deal. Right? No one's going to get mad about it because everybody's got something to plug when they're on TV. You say, I got a thing to plug. If you take the 5 seconds, plug it. And if they do, well, you got about 5 million new potential viewers. So
I get
say
that.
The words.
It's just making that conversational in your three minutes and not a second longer.
Oh, no, actually, it's super easy because it's like when they do your introduction, it's like, here's Len Testa from Touring Plans. Also, I hear you got a new show coming out called Disney Unpacked with Imagineer Jim Shule. Sounds like a lot of fun. Yeah, we're looking forward to it. October 1st, Patreon. So anyway, we're talking about data today, and it's super easy. You guys really need to take a f***ing class.
I was about to say, God, you made that look easy. Okay, yeah. Well, all right. Speaking of somebody who's really bad at plugs, getting back to me, again, we have Disney Dish we do with Len Testa. We have Fine Tuning, which I do with Drew Taylor, which is about animation news. And I should also mention that Mr. Taylor has his wonderful Light the Fuse, the official Mission Impossible podcast that he does with Charles Hood. We also have Looking at Lucasfilm, which I do with Brian Gaughan, and he and I will be recording a new episode of that sometime this coming weekend. We don't have to talk about Disney Unpacked at this moment because Aaron just did this amazing plug, so we can move on there.
I'm just hoping it shows up on the Today Show. That's all I care about right now. Oh, my God. That's right. A gold mine, baby. Gold mine. Grab a pickaxe and dig with me.
I know. But for now, this week, folks, I think that's going to do it for Marvelous Disney. So on behalf of Mr. Adams, thank you so much for listening, and we will be back soon.